everybody, it's Marco and Paweł once again. Welcome to our second episode of Cowlcast, our favorite, what's the word? Podcast.
Favorite podcast, right. The only podcast with a cow owl hybrid, by the way.
Right, right. So, what are we going to talk about today, Marco?
Yeah, actually, you want to talk about something we talked about last time, which is Google Now. I said that there is something new from the Google I/O, but we...
It was so long ago.
we only talked about stuff, yeah, which is old. And now I want to talk about the stuff which is new. So it's not yet in the productive version of Google Now, but it will be. And this is that it is contextual. So it looks to the context of what you're doing at the moment. And in the presentation of the Google I/O, there was the example that you are listening to music, and the artist of the music uses a pseudonym, and you just ask Google Now, what is his real name, without saying who you mean while listening to this music. And then Google says the right name. So the thing is, Google Now will always look at what you're doing and will see everything you do, and then you can ask stuff about that. And for example, you can, when you get a message in WhatsApp or any other text messenger, where is the question, do you want to go to the movie blah, blah, blah this evening? Then Google Now will automatically give you information about this movie without asking for it. Yeah, that's actually what it does.
It actually sounds like a huge threat to the security and privacy, doesn't it?
That's true. Google will do everything online. Google Now works only with an internet connection. So basically everything you do will be transferred to the Google servers.
That sounds really great.
Yeah.
Actually, imagine a situation like that. Google has everything about you, knows everything about you, knows everything you do, everything knows about all your conversations and so on and so on. And then you apply to Google for a job or whatever, and you meet with some person, and you know that they know already everything about you. Isn't it scary? They know all your bad secrets, darkest secrets, and even though they may accept you for a job or some kind of partner, it sounds really scary for me.
Yes, at least. Yes, it is.
I'm not sure I would apply to Facebook for any kind of job.
Yeah, but on the other side, you don't even apply for this job. Google, for example, knows that you want to apply for this job and has all your information. Save for Facebook, you don't have to apply. They just sent you a message, okay, we accept you or not.
Yes, and if you have enough work-related or IT-related conversations on Google Hangouts or Facebook Messenger or whatever, you probably just get an offer without any interviews, or or you don't. This could work, actually.
Yeah, actually, this is not a too bad idea. I could think about that this will happen in near future.
Yeah, it happens like that with GitHub already. They check out your repositories, and if you have some good code written, they can give you an offer.
Yeah, GitHub is some kind of a list of references.
Yeah, sure. I mean, not the GitHub itself, but probably companies interested in projects you are contributing to, or maybe GitHub itself too.
Yeah.
So this is scary, really. This is really scary. So, is that all?
About Google Now? Yeah, this is basically the most important thing about what is new in Google Now. They call that Google Now on Tap. So you're within an app, also a third-party app, and you just press the home button for some seconds, and then the information pops out automatically. And then it has the context of the app.
Great. I will probably never use that.
I will try that.
or at least I will try to use that only with non-confidential information or something that I'm not really... I have something information that I don't want to share with anybody. Not private, but... shameful or bashful information.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I know what you mean. Yeah, by the way, that brings me to another topic of Google. Because I use the Google location history, which is quite old.
Right.
So you can use it since some years already. And I'll track my location with my mobile phone. So I didn't disable it. But now they added timeline to Google Maps. It's called Google Maps Timeline, and you really get a nicely visualized overview about where you have been. So it automatically detects, for example, restaurants where you have been, and then it says you have been at the restaurant blah blah from then until then, and then you were traveling to somewhere else, to the cinema, for example, and then it says you have been to the cinema. And this works surprisingly well. And this is also some kind of information you actually don't want to share with anybody else. But yeah. I found this very interesting, and I like to use that. That's a problem, because that's kind of cool as well.
Maybe you should probably find another service which works like that, or probably create your own, so that you could track yourself.
Yeah, it's not the tracking; it's also that it detects where you have been, and this works really well. You can't imagine that. There are so many shops and stuff in this area very near from where you have been, but it detects where you have been.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. But does it work with different levels of the building? What do we call that?
No. It just says in most case it's a Google Maps entry, it knows, so it's not on different levels, different floors, you mean?
Floors, yes. As different floors. But it also could work somehow, maybe.
Yeah, maybe when every building uses this new iBeacon technology, then it's very, very detailed. So indoor location with the iBeacons works well as well.
But GPS gives you position in gives you three-dimensional position, so you could assess your position also from the ground. And also several buildings on Google Maps have information about stores or what services or what's on each level, so this could work somehow, I imagine.
I just be worried about my battery then when it tracks all the time. But it could work, indeed, yeah.
Okay, then. So, we could go to the next topic. So, there was some news about two guys hacking a Jeep. They could control the parts of the internal network of a car remotely through internet, completely without being near the car itself. Have you heard about that?
Yes, that was in the news everywhere.
But it's really interesting. The most important thing they could do was disabling the brakes, which is really, really interesting and really could be really dangerous. They also could control the radio, window wipes, or whatever we call that. What else? Let me check what else. Air conditioning, gearbox. Yeah, and that's all.
Yeah, that's quite much. And that's a problem with all these more and more connected devices, these Internet of Things. When it comes to cars, where it's really dangerous when it's out of control, then you really have to spend effort in security a lot.
Yes, and in this case, this is due to some unintentionally exposed services of internal network, which is really bad. Somebody could get hurt or killed or whatever. And I'm not sure, maybe I'm a little bit old-fashioned or I don't know, but I don't really see why would you really need your car to be connected to the internet.
Because it's cool.
But yes, sure, cool. It's cool when your fridge is connected to the internet and you can, I don't know, do something with that. But with a car, security is really hard to get right, especially in new applications like cars. When human life is at stake, we should be really, really cautious about that.
Yes, I see it the same way as you do.
But still, this recent news applies to Jeep Cherokee or whatever you call that, and Chrysler, some Chryslers, and the name of the system is called Uconnect. And what is really funny about that, let's call it black humor, is that you get updates much faster for your car than your Android phone, especially when you have something else than Nexus or something else. And for example, I have Sony Xperia and I will not get any updates after 4.2, which is really bad, and it shouldn't be like that.
Yeah,
and
right.
and you can get updates for your car really quickly.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be too hard to get security updates for your car when they are available. So the threshold or the effort you have to put in that should be very low to get security updates, but they shouldn't be released too fast so that there are new bugs in the updates.
Right.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
But when I heard the expression security updates for your car for the first time, it really made me chuckle. Several days ago, I haven't really known that it's possible to get security updates for your car. I mean, it's really funny.
Yeah, everything gets connected to the internet. And everything will get updates. And yeah, the car is one of the big things in the future.
Yeah, so what else can we say about that? There's a short movie about this attack. Oh, one more thing. They could also control the steering wheel, but when your gearbox was set to reverse. And they could actually control the steering wheel. So basically your whole car.
Oh, yeah, that's quite much.
Quite much? Too much, I guess.
So I think we agree it's a very big security issue when you have a connected car. Or an internet of cars.
internet of cars.
And that you should be careful with that. And especially the producers should be careful with that.
Yeah, and as far as I know, before this attack, before this this trial to control a car completely remotely, about 2 years ago, there was a successful attack on a similar car, but there was a guy. There had to be a guy inside the car, connected directly to the internal network. But it was also possible to control the car to some extent. But as far as I know, this is the first time where you could actually control substantial parts of a car through internet completely remotely. This is worth mentioning.
Yeah. maybe. So you said there was a video about that.
Yep.
We will put that in the show notes that, so that the listeners can watch the
video. There's a link to the article on Wired, and there's also the movie on that side.
Yeah, great.
So, you before we started recording, you mentioned that there's something happening with Windows 10. I don't know, maybe it's being released?
Yeah, maybe, maybe. So, the date of recording is the 29th of July. So, this is the date where Windows 10 is released. So, Windows 10 has its final version before all the updates come. And yeah, this is today. And Windows 10 is quite new in the sense of the strategy that they have for that. Because they say it's one Windows for all devices. Before Windows 10, you had Windows for your PC. You had a Windows phone for your mobile phone and maybe some Windows RT stuff for tablets and
Windows Embedded?
Yeah, right, Windows Embedded. And now it's one Windows for all devices. It's Windows 10. The kernel is used on your PC, on your tablet, on your mobile phone, and on Internet of Things devices, so maybe in your car as well. And this is quite cool because they also have universal apps that work on PCs, on mobile phones, on tablets, and maybe on some embedded devices, so this will be a bit out of all the rest because of the graphical user interface. But I think this is very interesting because there are different modes. When you use Windows on your desktop, it's in the desktop mode, and you have this start menu again, which is, got lost in Windows 8.
Yes, I missed that. This is why I never tried Windows 8.
Yeah, me neither. Windows 8 was never running on any machine that I used productively.
I tried it in a shop on a computer, which was on display, and I actually had some big problems with using Windows 8, like real big problems. I couldn't close Internet Explorer or whatever and go back to desktop. It was so unintuitive for me that I couldn't do basic things with it.
Yeah, right. That's the problem with this. It was called Metro, but now it's called Modern UI with all these tiles. So I think these tiles aren't the worst thing about that, but it's inconsistent. Sometimes everything is displayed in tiles, and sometimes it's in some other things in this, what you know from previous versions. Apps are, so the new Windows apps are always full screen. You can't use them in window mode in Windows 8. And this is also changed in Windows 10. So these typical full screen apps can be used in window mode now, so you can resize them. So this is a new
really?
Feature in Windows 10, but you can see Windows learned from all the critical feedback they got from everywhere. So all the stuff which was made bad in Windows 8 was revised and maybe improved again.
So they basically created a problem and then resolved it, and they are now heroes.
Yeah, probably. And I like that idea that they say, we learned from that. We can understand that you missed the start menu and that you missed to resize Windows. And now they thought about that, and it really is promising, I guess.
Sure, because you don't produce software, don't create software for yourself, but for the customers. And if customers don't like it, then you have a real big problem.
Right. They started with the Windows Insider program about half a year ago, or even a bit more than half a year ago, where some interested people could try the pre-releases of Windows 10, and they were always asked for feedback and feedback and feedback. And I was part of this insider program, but I heard about that there was changed really a lot, so that they really used that feedback and not just said, yeah, give us feedback and then we will see what we do with that. So they really changed a lot, and that, yeah, some new features came and they were removed again, and the UI changed. And so they really made it for the customer now, like you said.
Yes, great, great. There's also a huge feeling about Microsoft that they're being more open, that the company is going in the right direction. For example, like you said, with Windows 10, but also they opened .NET framework, or at least part of it, as far as I know. They are releasing some software for Linux and OS X, Visual Studio Code, as far as I remember. They're also opening some, releasing, I'm not sure, support for IPython notebooks. They have a service called, I don't remember what it's called, but they also have some service for IPython notebooks, running them remotely. And every time I see a news about Microsoft doing anything recently, there is a huge number of comments about Microsoft going in the right direction, and I think that it's a great move.
Absolutely. Who could have imagined some years ago that they will release software for Linux? It's really a big, different Microsoft now. So it's a big change indeed.
Yes, I've heard that Windows 10, or maybe not Windows 10, but you can, with the next version of Visual Studio, you will be able to write applications for iOS and Android, as far as I know.
Yeah, how cool is that?
Okay, so what else besides universal apps and those different modes?
Yeah, Microsoft released their own digital assistant, Cortana. Do you know Cortana?
Yeah, I've heard about that, but I have never used it.
It's like Siri for iOS or Google Now. So you can say, hey, Cortana, and then it listens to you, and you can ask questions and give commands. For example, that you want to make an appointment for some specific date, and it asks questions back and you can answer then, and so there is an interaction. So nothing really new in the whole IT world, but it's new for Microsoft, and yeah, as far as I know, it works quite well.
Perfect.
Yeah, and Edge, the new browser. That's a very interesting topic, because Microsoft, yeah, they saw themselves that Internet Explorer is not the best browser.
really?
So some years ago already, they had a big campaign against the Internet Explorer 6. I'm not sure if you know that. There's a website, and it says, or it shows statistics about the death of Internet Explorer 6, and they want to kill their own product.
It was a pain in the ass for many developers.
Right. But also the new versions of Internet Explorer, they were better than the Internet Explorer 6, but they were still not perfect for the whole web community. And now they created Edge, a fully new browser. So they created it from the scratch, new, without basing on the Internet Explorer. And this will be the new browser in the future of Microsoft. In Windows 10, it is installed by default, but there is also the Internet Explorer for compatibility mode that people can switch to the Internet Explorer. But you can see they realize our Internet Explorer wasn't so good and we have to do something new with that.
Perfect. Perfect. It's really great. And do you think that it will really make a difference? But it's not going to be like with Internet Explorer with Internet Explorer. Are they going to make a big difference with that? Or is it just marketing and, you know, the logo is very similar. So maybe it's a sign that not much is going to be changed.
Well, you've seen how Microsoft changed. And I think they really realized that the Internet Explorer wasn't the best product they ever had. And
probably.
I think they really have seen that web standards are really important so that it's compatible with other browsers and not implementing some proprietary stuff in the browser like this ActiveX, it is called, as far as I know.
Yes, they probably stopped supporting that, as far as I know.
Right, so this won't be supported in the future in Edge. And so they really see we have to change something. We have to take a whole other approach for this whole browser market. And so I trust in Microsoft that this will be a better browser. Didn't say a good browser, but that it will be a better browser than the Internet Explorer was, or still is.
I hope too. And, you know, about ActiveX, also Silverlight is going to be discontinued, as far as I can see, in 2029. Actually, support will end in 2029, and Microsoft Edge will not support Silverlight at all. So it's also a big step, I guess.
Right. Silverlight was the Flash killer, but Flash killed itself, so...
But I have to still use Silverlight because my cable television, Dostawca. What do you call Dostawca in English?
I have no idea. But there are still some streaming providers in Germany as well.
Oh, provider. Yes.
Yeah, there are still some streaming providers in Germany as well that require Silverlight. And I hope they see Microsoft won't support that in their own products in the future and that they change that to HTML5 technology or something else.
Yes, and I have to use it because my cable television provider uses that for television on the internet, streaming television. And if I want to use it on my computer, I have to use Silverlight, which is a problem. But what can I do right now?
Do not watch television.
At all.
You can do that, right.
I could do that. are there any new things or are there more new things? I have heard, but I cannot really find that information right now. But in Windows 10, updates will be mandatory, and you will not be able to disable automatic updates. And I have read several days ago that there is already a problem with that, especially with drivers from other companies. And in this case, as far as I remember, it was with NVIDIA graphic drivers, that there were some problems after recent updates. For example, you couldn't get two monitors, two screens to work simultaneously, or there were some problems with multiple graphic cards. And so on, because there were some problems with version numbers of the drivers, as far as I remember. And automatic updates, yes, it's a difficult topic, I guess, because sometimes it's what you want, and sometimes it can give you several problems, and you have no way to do anything about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, in Windows it's possible to, or in Windows 10 it's possible to postpone updates to maximum of 8 months, as far as I know. And then you have to update indeed. I think this is not the perfect approach, but it's a good approach because security updates are getting more important and more important from time to time. And but when there are these problems, like you said, with these version numbers of these drivers, when this is really a problem with the update system and not with the producer of these drivers.
Yeah, sure, exactly. And like you said, the problem is with the system itself, not the drivers. And I am really pro automatic updates when it comes to security updates. But when you have a device which has some proprietary drivers which are shipped to you by the producer of this device, probably it shouldn't be mixed with Windows updates system, so that the producer can deliver the latest updates on their own and without any disturbances from the system. I guess it would be a better approach. Of course, if you have everything in Windows Update or whatever it's called right now, it's easier and more convenient. And you don't get to have so many applications running in the background, checking whether new updates are available. But still, multiple systems for updating different parts of the operating system, different software, it's... Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's hard to get right, I guess.
True. Okay, so I guess that's all we have to talk about today.
You think so? Okay. Yeah, probably. So thank you for listening to our second episode. And...
thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.